TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It's Pastoral Down.
You straight punk bitch!
I mean, you're just gonna replace me.
Shut up!
Brandon Morales,
the biggest slut in the Western Hemisphere!
Why do I have to have a buzzer?
And Greg DeMarco.
You are now and will forever be an asshole.
Because it's my show.
And I love you, Greg.
You guys know how to party.
You're welcome.
What is up? It is a beautiful Tuesday evening here in Phoenix, Arizona, when we record this. For me, anyway, my name is Greg DeMarco, and this is The Greg DeMarco Show. You can find me on the Twitter at ChairShotGreg. You can also find the website at TheChairShot.com or at TheChairShot.com on social media. Of course, this Greg DeMarco Show is part of the ChairShot Radio Network, which you can find at TheChairShot.com. And while you're there, while you're reading our amazing content, while you're listening to our fantastic podcast, head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. Pick up your very own t-shirt. I've got the classic ChairShot logo on today. It is, of course, in the soft style. That's the only style of shirt that you should buy from there. So again, ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. If you go to TheChairShot.com, you can just click store on the menu and get there as well. So I don't have Patrick O'Dowd to introduce to you today. I don't have Miranda Morales to introduce to you today. They are both in prime busy season at work. Granted, I'm in prime busy season at work too, but I'm still here with you because that's my dedication to you. I'm just joking. Of course, you know Patrick wasn't here last week. It was Miranda and I. But of course, you can follow Patrick O'Dowd on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That's WrestlingRealist. There's no I in wrestling, but there is one in Realist, and there is one in Patrick. Go follow him. Get him over 440 Twitter followers. You can't follow Miranda because she's not on Twitter, and she will hopefully, for her sake, never be on Twitter. However, I'm not going to leave you hanging, of course. I'm not going to force you to sit here and listen to me for 45 minutes, fly solo, or anything like that. I have a very special treat for all of you listening today. You've probably already seen me allude to it. And of course, if you're listening, you probably saw the name of the show and know who's here with me as well. A little over 2 years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing Sebastian Suave from Smash Wrestling, from the Great White North in general. Up in Canada, and to revisit that here today, not revisit it, whereas we're playing the same interview again, but to catch back up with Sebastian and have a lot of fun, talk some shop, and kind of get up to date on what he's doing and where you can follow along as well. So, Sebastian, welcome back to the show.
Ed, thank you for having me. Stoked to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited too. We had a lot of fun last time, and it's fun. Last time it was just you and I as well. Last time there was nobody else, which is good because it's you know.
It was I'm funny. A bit of a mic hog. You can just say it. There's only room for two of us.
That might be
true. Horrible if a three-team broadcast. If we had a three-person broadcast team, I'd be horrible.
I don't even like those anyway, so it's okay. But speaking of broadcast, it's funny because when watching Takeover, which I know you were there for, Takeover Toronto, at the end of the main event, Mauro Ranallo made a little comment that says, you know, for those who know, there's no explanation. For those who don't know, you could never explain it to them. Something like that. And that's kind of how it is when we get to come together because we've done things in the business that if you haven't done them, you just don't really know. And you don't have that experience and just know how good and how bad and how crazy it can be. So I definitely do get that.
You got the crazy part down.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Diving back into it, so I know how that is. And our listeners know that. But you were, July of 2017 is when we last did this. It's been 2 years. Back then, you were heading over to Fight Network and you know, bringing Smash Wrestling to that larger audience. How the past 2 years have that been, man?
It's been exciting. It's had a lot of highs. It's had some learning curves. And I think something I can relate, it's just not to any promoter, but if anyone has been a business owner, I guess the first time, I don't want to say that was the first time we reached the major success of Smash, but at least when it came to, you know, networking and getting kind of on a major TV or international platform, you've reached that goal, you've reached that success point, and while there is success and there is profit and there is visibility and optics, you realize every time you reach the top of one mountain, to reach the next top of the mountain, now you got to spend more. You got to do more. So to maintain that spot is one thing, but I mean, with anything, it's you don't want to stagnate when you hit a goal. You want to still, even if it's progressively, you want to progressively climb. And every time you hit a noticeable goal as a business owner, and specifically in professional wrestling, unfortunately, the next question typically is, all right, how and when can we spend A, B, and C, X, Y, and Z? And it was an eye-opener, and we're still in that process. And to be honest, that's, I feel like, a process that it's a vicious circle. Any promoter that wants to be ambitious will forever be in. There's always more profits, more visibility, and then, you know, more expensive cameras, more high-risk events, and, you know, it's, again, like, not to be redundant, but it's a vicious cycle, and it's good, and I wouldn't say it's bad. It's a learning experience. Definitely has its, I don't want to say I've dealt with any kind of serious anxiety, but it does have its anxiety, because at the end of the day, it's your money, it's your time, it's your baby, and it's a bit of a, the right word, I guess, would be, it truly is a risk. And I think when you start a promotion, when you're smaller, you can say there's a big risk, you know, like how much money you may gain or lose, how many, you know, good days and bad days of optics. But now you're playing with, like, you know, you're playing with fire, to be blunt. And I've been very thankful in the 2 years that I've had a great relationship with Fight Network and my contacts over there. And they've been very supportive. And to really summarize it for you guys, we've had strong viewership in Canada. Recently, we saw a cool update that for 3 or 4 weeks in a row, we're once again the top-rated, I don't know if it was a wrestling segment, wrestling programming, or if it was specifically a program for that night of the week, but I'm pretty sure it was with wrestling, but we were ahead of the other wrestling programs for 4 weeks in a row or something. So we've had a strong UK following, and that's allowed us to, you know, grow, whether it's our on-demand or our viewership, and even our social media across different countries. So it's kind of been cool. It's kind of surreal when you see that, you know, you're not necessarily just a company that's in one city with DVDs, and not, you know, not downplaying others, but really cool that you have followers in other countries, and that, again, the UK thing's big for me. So when I see some of the rating numbers we get there from the Fight Network offices, where they say that we're up there, and I see some of the other wrestling programs that are on their network, it's kind of cool. But yeah, it's been a big success, but it's such a big beast that if I've had to summarize it.
Yeah, I feel that, and I know that, and we'll get to that in a second. It's funny you talked about, you know, seeing the numbers from the UK, even running a website. We see different numbers and everything, and what's really funny about that, we're like, you know, we see our rankings in the US and whatever, and then we have this crazy high ranking in Poland. And that's not even a joke. Like, the chair shot has, like, just jumped up the charts. I don't know what it is, how we're wording things, what we're doing that's causing people to find us in this one country. But for those of you listening in Poland, thank you for doing that and for being a part of it.
It's much more modest. But I remember in year one or two or whatever it was, we'd start doing a little more of the online downloads and stuff of that nature. Mm-hmm. and we're like, hey guys, look, we got the Canadian numbers, US, UK, and it's like, yeah, we have 14 people in India, or like next week would be like, Austria, we have 7 people, and like, hey, Brazil's up to 6, like, it'd just be funny. It's like, we get, you know, it's such a small, minute number, but at the same time, you're just so humbled that, you know, as dumb as it sounds, hey, 6 people in Brazil give a shit about us, and sometimes... I remember our favorite was when the number was legitimately just 1 or maybe 2, because whenever it was 1 or 2, it was a country that you've never heard of or you can't even pronounce. It's like, I'm like, really? Like, there's such a country? There's like this one guy in this country, like, you know, like, again, don't want to sound terrible saying, but this third world country that we honestly have never heard of. And it's like, cool that someone from there is like, you know what? Yeah. I need to, you know, pay $10 for a Smash Wrestling live event download.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, it reminded me of those crazy stats.
It's amazing the stuff you see and the fans you get, and just, you know, it's why we kind of work hard sometimes, and why you're up late and doing things. It's you kind of see that. You talked about the risks that are involved with promoting and making different decisions. How do you give people some insight? Like, how do you know when it's time to make a decision like that? When it's time to take a next step? What factors into that decision?
I'd like to come off intelligent, and I think I've had my intelligent days, but like anything else in life, sometimes you just need to take an ass kicking. And fortunately, the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, Smash is just myself, and I'm not a money guy. I'm not a second generation guy. From the bottom, scratching and clawing, kind of guy, and I have, you know, I have a 5-star team with me that I'm very proud of. Our guys are the reason we've grown so much, but for an operation like us, it just sometimes means taking an ass kicking. Sometimes maybe you have one show that has a low attendance, and you know, it humbles you a bit, and sometimes you take a financial hit, sometimes you burn out, sometimes you and your team, you know, maybe things, you know, luckily for the most part, we've always, we're such a tight-knit group, and we have that reputation here in Ontario for that, but, you know, sometimes things get frustrating, and it's healthy, it's normal, that happens in any working environment, and, you know, to say that everything's gravy and, you know, everything flourishes and every day's perfect is bullshit in any industry. So sometimes you just need to take an ass kicking and, you know, get that wake up call that, you know, losing that much money for one show didn't feel good. Losing such attendance. One of my more notable examples, it's a very easy example, is as people who follow us or keep an eye on us know, we had such a diverse roster for any market, really. We had, you know, guys from Eastern Canada like Mike Bailey and the Smash Brothers, and you had your Tyson Dukes and Tareks and Brent Banks here from Ontario, and you had your Kevin Bennett's who, you know, come out of nowhere on our roster from Buffalo. You had the Ohio guys with, you know, Matt Cross and Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano. You had your Biff Busicks and your Drew Gulak, your Chris Hero. Like, and the reason I'm naming these people is there's literally a card where we had all of those people plus Rich Swann. Like, we had like 15 people deemed as a viable draw on one card. Yeah, Tataki Watanabe from Japan was on excursion with us, and it was a show that had about 2 blow-off matches. There was a tables match. There's literally all these names that could make a stacked card anywhere, and we suddenly went from a near sellout venue to the net, well, not literally, the show before was a sellout, to like 150 people, and the card was amazing, and we promoted well. And the reality was Rich Swann and Tataki Watanabe were the 2 least seen guys in a Smash Wrestling ring with their 3rd or 4th appearances. So it, at the time, the way we were booking, or the way someone else was booking, it was kind of getting popular up here, bringing in those fly-ins, and again, I don't want to label them as a PWG Ring of Honor type worker, but such was the case. And with all the promotions within, you know, within, I once made a measurement within, like, I want to say an hour and a half or 2-hour radius, there was 21 to 23 active promotions. It's a very saturated market, and when a lot of the promotions in that area are doing these kind of bookings, and we have a lot of these guys as regulars, Johnny Gargano, Matt Cross, Biff Busick, Chris Hero, all these guys left and right. The reality is people said, hey, I can pass on that card, whether they're just a Smash regular or whether they're, attending 4 or 5 shows a month, indie shows a month. I mean, like, I don't care how crazy a fan is. People got to compute that the typical indie fan, even if they crap on WWE, they probably do watch WWE. Watching Raw and SmackDown, they're consuming 5 hours of wrestling a week. If they're watching NXT or 205 Live or whatever they had a few years ago, if they got the network and they're consuming some of the non-wrestling content, they can be five to 10 hours a week of WWE content. If they're watching PWG or Progress on the regular and they have an on-demand service. And the reality is a lot of these on-demand service, they're a multi-promotion platform. So there's up to 40 promotions on one. And of course, they're not consuming them all, but there's typically 2 or 3 major promotions that are on that monthly payment plan. And if they got another promotion, they follow locally. And let's say they attend anywhere from 2 to 6 shows live a month. They're consuming, 15-20 hours of wrestling a week? Like, I can't do that. Even the most passionate, and even if you do it, at some point you're just watching and just burning out and just spacing out. So, and it's eventually it's not even if you can consume all that or if you have the money or not. It's, do you even have the time? People have jobs, they have sleep, they have families, you know, they have other shit to do. They're in a sports league or they got friends, like, so for us it was a big wake-up call that the great storylines and productions and those names that we were bringing on the regular, it keeps your regulars and your diehards happy, which I will never take for granted. But you have to prioritize sometimes bringing in a new face, because at the end of the day, that's, again, not diminishing any member of the roster, but that's just one spot. Like, if it meant one show there wasn't a Chris Hero or a Drew Gulak or a Johnny Gargano, you know, which those are guys I never wanted to take off, you still had everyone else, and you still have 6 out of 7 matches that have your great storylines, your core roster, and what makes you you, what makes Smash Smash. But that 7th match may need to be a reason to bring the part-time fans in more often, or to bring the fans that just haven't given the indies or specifically Smash in the indie market in our area a chance. So that card was formed from a lot of storylines and a lot of unique matchups, and it was a hell of a card. But business-wise, you take your passion and love and emotions out, you have your regulars that would probably show up if the card was poop and you gave a B-minus effort. But the reality is, you know, and I'm not saying ignore that core audience, but that core audience is there's a reason they're a core audience, because they trust you. They now know that you deliver and they have a feel for what you are as a promotion. So, you know, swapping out 2 guys and using that to bring in a key fresh face is something that you got to do, whether you know, 1 or 2 people get a little salty. Because I find, like, one thing that's dangerous is promoters or promotions listening to 1 or 2 fans respond to an announcement with, you know, they put a meme, take all my money, take all my money. It's like, brother, you're coming full time to all these shows for 3 years. Like, we already have your business. And I'm not saying that as an asshole. I'm saying that, like, God bless you. You're loyal. Like, we're going to keep delivering for you. But we're looking for new money, because as a business, you got to grow. These rosters get more expensive. Production gets more expensive. You know, trying to grow the company, taking risk is expensive, right? You know, that's the best insight I can give as a promoter for, you know, these risks. It's, I mean, you know better than I. There's millions of examples of stressful and high-risk scenarios, but the best way I can always explain it to people is that one particular show a few years ago, because you're putting out a good product, you're being smart, and you're getting great feedback. But financially and crowd-wise, you know, it wasn't. And I hate to – this is something that, you know, I'd assume the average fan may find very insulting, but I always believe that – to some extent, money will solve everything. If you put on a product that is bringing in a packed house, 300, 400, 500, whatever your audience is, everything else, for the most part, will fix itself. If you're drawing in that many people It probably means new fans are coming in, which means more regular income, which could mean upgraded production, which means you can probably afford to pay for some hype videos, which means you can probably put more money into advertising so more indie fans who are not aware of you can come, which means you can bring more of these fresh faces that's going to be a bucket list for indie fans, which means you can create more cool platforms. You could maybe, put upgrade your company to where you are a TV show or something. It's just, you know, maybe you can pay a staff and wrestlers a little extra better and morale's up. You know, money will solve almost everything. Like, discussing, you know, an indie company's raffle plan or what merch or concession. I mean, I would love to be in the position of where PWG or Ring of Honor was with merchandise or the Young Bucks or stuff. The reality is, merchandise and independence are good. They can even be great. But, you know, not every indie company is going to be at that Joey Ryan or PWG level of merchandise. And you really got to find ways at the end of the day, unless you're going to be a very sponsor-driven company, to up your gate, because gate is just not your bread and butter of your revenue. But at the same time, an increased gate means increased fan atmosphere, which means wrestler morales and effort go up. There's a whole ripple effect, right? More loud buzz, which means more online sales and more social media activity. Just a ripple effect. So, you know, I think promoters just have to be self-aware of not always what's good on paper, but what's going to, you know, just black and white as a business, what's going to generate a lot of revenue, because a lot of revenue will allow you to kind of, you know, work everything else out for the most part. Money will solve most of your problems.
Yeah, it's a true reality that some people don't like to hear about, but it's 100% true. And it's so funny you talk about, you know, what works for the fans and what doesn't. Even out here, as we look to bring back Impact Zone Wrestling, which we've talked about, you know, I see our market's getting to be that way here in Phoenix with a lot of companies running. And I'll see companies that'll stack a card with some good talent, some outside talent, and then you'll see their show or you hear about it and they drew 30 people. And yep. And you wonder why, and it's because it's also about the market itself. Like, this is a storyline-driven market where I'm at. And I see some shows that draw 30 people, and I'm like, you pick that show up, you drop it down in SoCal, you're going to draw five times as many people. Yep. Because that's a SoCal-style show. But we're not in SoCal. We're in Phoenix. Yep. And Phoenix is a bunch of transplants who, you know, like Memphis-style stuff and who are used to storylines. And so as we plan, we've got to do a lot of that as well. So I definitely do get that. And you're right. You know, you make that decision. It's not an easy decision. You know, we ran the IZW reunion show back in May that I helped with. Yep. And after that, it was so easy to be like, this is great. We sold out. We raised a bunch of money for somebody's medical costs. All the talent was loving it. Everybody was like, are you guys going to come back? And we were like, no, we're not going to. And it wasn't until a few weeks later that we were like, okay, could we, you know, what would it look like? Could we really do it? And do we have the time? And then the decision was made to figure out a schedule and do that. But yeah, sometimes you also make those rash decisions and you got to put a little bit of, you know, the right amount of time to make sure you know what you're getting into again. So definitely do appreciate that. You talked about, you know, how crazy, you know, the area it is and saturated. And of course, not too long ago, the entire wrestling world was sitting in your area in you know, with SummerSlam and everything that happens around SummerSlam with TakeOver, Raw, and SmackDown. And I know there were NXT tryouts and there were a lot. Like, what does that do to the market? Does that help the market? Does that hurt the market? What does that really do?
I'll be very honest. So we ran 8 shows. Well, we didn't run it. We hosted 8 shows and we ran some of them. We ran a Smash Wrestling show. Super Showdown's our biggest show of the year every August, usually mid to late August, so the timing was right. We hosted Progress. We had a Smash vs. Progress show. We were obviously co-financing. We had the Summit, which we were kind of working things out originally with Shimmer about potentially doing a women's show, and they had the great idea of having Shimmer, Rise, Femme Fatale, and Smash Wrestling all work on a women's show as a collaboration. We had OWE there from China and WXW from Germany and Progress from the UK, obviously. And there was a lot of success, I'd say, attendance-wise. Maybe, you know, 5 of them definitely drew a great crowd. one or two drew an average crowd, one drew a weaker crowd, but it was a very interesting learning experience. The one interesting thing I noted, and I truly can't prove it, but at least based on the statistical numbers of tickets we saw purchased, typically you look at SummerSlam or Survivor Series or Royal Rumble weekend, just like WrestleMania weekend, they're not as big as WrestleMania, but there is a traveling audience because TakeOver's there, and typically local indie companies will run, and maybe Ring of Honor will be there, such as Ring of Honor was in town this weekend. And I find that there is a heavy U.S. traveling audience in the U.S. for these four pay-per-view weekends typically. But for whatever reason, even if the geography of Toronto isn't that far from many cities and major markets in the U.S., it is, you're technically crossing the border. So I don't know why, but there wasn't a lot of American fans. There was a respectable amount, but not what I thought was the potential. As there is with the Big Four weekends stateside. So I don't know if it's passports or just the fact that it's a different country. Thankfully, the Canadian market came in strong, and you know, I would deem our end of things very stressful. Definitely one of, arguably the most stressful weekend or a set of events we've had to work on thus far as a company. But the optics, the draws, the, you know, the number of people coming collectively over the course of 8 shows, a fair amount of fans committing anywhere from 4 to 8 shows, it really made it, it was a really good feeling to see where we were. But the reality is there was, and it's not a good or bad thing, you got to always understand that, and at least in my opinion, you focus on what you can control, and what you can't control, you can't control, make your peace with it. There's 8 other companies that were, or possibly more, but I think there was about another 8 shows running during those same 4 days as us. And whether they were from Toronto or outside of Toronto, every company has the right to run whatever time and date they want, right? We're at the end of the day, we're running the same weekend as WWE. So anyone on these WrestleMania or SummerSlam weekends that get upset about other companies running would be hypocritical. Now, to be honest, we had another, you know, quality promotion in Toronto running the same night as us, which was expected that there would be someone doing that. But there was also Ring of Honor running the same night as us, specifically for the Smash Wrestling Super Showdown show. So, you know, when you got, like, I believe it was 4 shows, and one of them being Ring of Honor running the same night as your show, it's nerve-wracking. It does throw a wrench in your plans. But, again, if we're mad that Ring of Honor is running the same night we're running as WWE's bringing a show this weekend, it's kind of hypocritical, right? But it did help. It did make me kind of reassess that we brought so many fans in, and some of them, mind you, like those people who flew in from Brazil for this, just specifically for our set of shows, and from the UK and from the Maritimes, and definitely from the States, those by car or by flight. But at the end of the day, it's, well, if we did all this and we had a good quantity of Eastern Canadian fans there in the Toronto market, we can do the same thing. I'm not saying it'd be 8 shows, but whether you're running 4 shows or 6 shows or 8 shows, you can do this on your own weekend. All the challenges we faced were hypothetical to, there was other shows running the same nights and the same weekend as us. Like, again, we talked earlier about how many hours of wrestling a fan can consume in a week and how much money they can spend in a month. How much money can a wrestling fan spend over 4 days or 5 days at SummerSlam weekend? NXT tickets, SummerSlam tickets were not cheap, and a lot were in the secondary market with scalpers or the online ticket StubHubs and whatnot. You still got tickets for Raw and SmackDown. A lot of these fans, they're going to buy merch at these WWE events that aren't cheap. They're going to probably go to some of these meet and greets. Ziggler has a stand-up. Foley has a stand-up. Because these companies we're working with are coming from, you know, UK and Germany and from China, you know, buying those flights for dozens of guys ain't cheap. Tickets have to, you know, ticket prices are their ticket prices. Yeah. And one thing, you know, not saying our ticket prices were too high, but they were above our average ticket price. And we've noticed that our competitors that weekend, their ticket prices, some of them putting out discounts out there, or, you know, not going to say one of the major companies, but they're also on Groupon on stuff. So if you're typically $10, $15 more than these other competitors, and now you have to raise prices with Progress or yourself to another $10, $15, and these competitors are dropping theirs by $20, like, there's a substantial ticket differential price in $50 for some tickets, right? It's insane, especially if people are coming for four shows or they're paying for their significant other or their kids, right? It's you add all that up. So there's so many factors. And, like, what are we going to do in the middle of promoting these events and having good ticket sales? You're going to suddenly cut your ticket prices and put a discount code as well, which is suicidal, because your loyal fans who paid a premium, now they're going to see you're rewarding other fans with a discount, right? So there was so many factors, and what I'm trying to get at is they're not factors you can complain about. Like I said, you control what you can control. What you can't control, you got to kind of just be self-aware about it. And all these factors, from how much wrestling there is over the course of a couple days to the ticket prices to the competition and their ticket prices, and hell, Toronto downtown traffic when fans are trying to go from one show to another, you can't control all that stuff. So what you can't control is perhaps being on your own weekend with less competition. And obviously you're trying to capitalize on the SummerSlam market, but I don't think that, at least in Toronto or on the Canadian soil, you're getting as much of an international market as if an American city. And it's crazy because, if I'm not mistaken, Toronto's up there population-wise with New York, Chicago, and LA as the big four markets with at least population density. And you see it in professional sports. There's typically two teams quite often in New York, LA, and Chicago, and Toronto's always discussed for that in the big four sports. So we are a viable market, but again, whether people like to admit it or not, just in professional sports, much like in the entertainment industry, the heart and soul is in the U.S. market. Canadian sports teams, even if something like hockey is, you know, it's a Canadian sport, the Canadian fans are the rowdiest, you are very dependent on your success by how much awareness you have in America and your ratings in America. And same goes for in the entertainment industry. Like, a lot of Canadian wrestlers is a good example. We can't cross the border the way the Americans cross here. And there are some Canadian wrestlers that are outstanding and high performing and receiving that buzz. But until they get on an American platform, they're not blowing up. To be quite frank, I know a lot of them have been or are on a radar with a lot of big U.S. companies. But until they start getting their buzz on those PWGs, AAWs, AIW Beyond, it's kind of a standstill situation. And the same goes for us as a promotion. And again, that border can be a benefit and a curse to us. So really, to summarize it, like, if you had to put a gun to my head, I may not run during a SummerSlam weekend. I know I wouldn't run during a WrestleMania. I mean, I think running during WrestleMania weekend has become a status symbol, almost like you're like, I'm one of the big companies. The reality is, outside of the WWE and, you know, the let's say WrestleMania and TakeOver and Ring of Honor will probably run there, and like Impact, outside of WWE, you gotta have something that is so identifiable to a larger market. I get a lot of companies like Smash, and I'm not diminishing ourselves, but you have so much buzz. It's different. It's one thing to have buzz online and have social media followers and have people clicking retweet than spending money on you. You know, at the end of the day, it's like it's step one to, it's like advertising. You're in a newspaper. It's people might just, you know, flip through the pages and they'll miss you the first time. The second time they catch it, the third time they actually read it, the fourth time they debate it, the fifth time they decide to buy it, the sixth time they actually decide to buy it, the seventh time, you know, they're committed to you. It's as an indie company, when you're so small niche, like, you're trying to get attention and awareness and optics, and then eventually these fans consume you through a free YouTube video, and that's wonderful. And they may retweet, heard a lot of good things about this company. That's great. And I'm not downplaying that, but they haven't spent money on you. So coming to WrestleMania weekend, there's all these fans, like, a lot of my staff and a lot of my friends, they'll fly down to these weekend. They're probably spending their money on TakeOver. They're probably spending their money on one of GCW's Janela Spring Break shows or possibly Bloodsport. You know, these are the sure bets. Beyond that, everything else is bunched up. And I don't care what name you have on your show. I forgot the ridiculous number. WrestleMania this past year had, like, what, 68 or 72?
It was insane.
100-plus events. And I was looking at some of these cards of these – and I know these companies. Again, I haven't spent money on them, but I'm aware of them on Reddit or social media. And I'm seeing up to 20, 30, 40 cards that are so impressive. But the reality is, again, I'm just going to throw a random name, but Matt Cross or Sami Callihan – they're on like 5-6 of these cards. So like, as impressive these cards are, it's everyone's got these impressive cards. Everyone's got the names. You're not offering something that's different from the other ones. That's why a Bloodsport or a Janela Spring Break or a Takeover draw well. It's because you can't see that anywhere else that's WrestleMania weekend. But bringing, you know, this name and that name and this name and that name, even the impressive high demand guys, you know, like, you know, right now Jordan Grace is on fire, Joey Ryan's on fire. These kind of people, these performers, you book them. It's great if you're running in a town in your own city without competition. It's another thing when they're on a bunch of other shows and there's 70, 80, 200 other names, you know, 5 minutes down the road. So, you know, SummerSlam was a smaller scale comparison of WrestleMania, but I think a lot of companies, it's a status symbol that, you know, we're one of the big companies because we're on WrestleMania weekend. But I can tell you there's so many of them that I hear these horror stories that they drew 30 people, they drew 62, and their cards look like they've spent well above five, you know, the minimum five figures. And that's a heart attack to me. It's numbers that I don't even want to think about, you know. And like, and it's a shame because they got great cards and it's part of a great weekend. But again, you sometimes got to get your ass kicked to, I guess, reassess how you proceed as a business and as a promoter. And sometimes getting your ass kicked in one part of the business kind of probably has you put your guard up going into other situations. Maybe someone who got their ass kicked in one scenario will go into WrestleMania weekend and say, well, it sounds good on paper, but let's be realistic. And you kind of approach, and I think that's kind of the position I'm in at this moment, is going forward, I'm not worried about optics if people see that 1 or 2 months we have a slower schedule like we have coming up, because we have some big goals. We probably have some bigger goals than we've ever had with Smash Wrestling. But it means kind of putting our pride aside and putting our ego aside and focusing on, hey, we might need a quieter schedule for a month or two so we can focus on some of these big goals, and not kind of swing for the fences and hope for the best. But hey, let's make it a sure bet. Let's not kind of just be optimistic that maybe this show will draw because of A, B, and C. Let's make sure this show draws, or this big project is sealed and dealed and delivered because, you know, there's a signature or something, you know?
Yeah, and it's about, you know, put in the work and you get the results. Yeah. And it doesn't happen overnight.
I think one of the things I dislike the most about wrestling is people depending on gate or saying, I've heard a lot of good buzz, or, you know, the door should do well. It's like, no, you're leaving that to chance, you know. And sometimes maybe doors kill it, but for me, doors are always going to be zero, and anything above that is a bonus. Because you want your security, you want to know what your pre-sales are come show day.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. That's where it needs to be. And you see it, and there's a company who just announced a show out here, and I'm like, I don't even know how that's possible given what their first few shows did, but... You know, it's a money pit for some, and you never want to be in that spot. I want to shift gears a little bit and let you talk about some stuff that's a little more fun. Over the past couple of years, you and some other folks have kind of banded yourself together in a group known as the Pillars. And I want to give our listeners an opportunity to hear about those names. And I know, obviously, it's outwardly it's a gimmick, but I know it has more. There's more meaning behind that name than just driving storylines. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Tyson Dukes is one of the four pillars with Brent Banks, Tarek, and myself. The basic foundation of why we're all together in and out of the ring is Tyson Dukes was my mentor, and Brent Banks and I started training together about the same month. We graduated the same time. We had our first match against each other. And when we had our first match against each other, by the time we walked through the curtains, there was Tyson Dukes behind the curtain, watched everything, hugged us and congratulated us. When we're like, whoa, it's not our trainer or our friends or our peers or the other students. It's the man who we have never, you know, gone our way to impress, and we're still kids on the stacked roster, decided to, you know, make sure to keep an eye on us and congratulate us. And so Brendan and I started together. Tyson was our mentor. And around the time Tarek started at my wrestling school, I was an assistant trainer. And, you know, we developed a friendship, and he was someone that I just saw a lot of promise in. And so I played the same role to him as Tyson has to me as a mentor. And now Tyson is a mentor to Tarek. And really, I feel we all play mentor to each other. You know, like, Brent's the quiet guy in the group, but I always pick at him for my offense or feedback on my matches, because he's been asked that of me since day one, even before when we're, you know, filming our own training matches. So Tyson sometimes comes to me and asks for feedback on his matches or style or his promos or his presentation, and it always catches me off guard and I'm uncomfortable. I'm like, but you're my mentor, you're the man, why are you coming to me? And, you know, being in the role of a promoter and a booker, and, you know, now pretty much like a friend, a brother, he trusts my judgment there too. So there's a very organic kind of like a wrestling family tree there between the four of us. But yeah, Tyson being Tyson, if anyone knows, he is one of the true students of the game who studies and embodies all different styles, you know, before a lot of the styles that are gained popularity from the British wrestling scene before it blew up, the whole world of sports style. Like, he was preaching that, you know, over a decade ago, and that was his thing. And he was always big on the whole All Japan, you know, early 90s kind of style wrestling. And he was always a big fan of the Four Pillars of Heaven, you know, the pillars over there in All Japan. And he kind of looked at us in the same light, where we are four of the originals of Smash Wrestling. I think there's five of us that were original since day one, with Mike Rollins and Scotty O'Shea, I believe. And the four of us, you know, we always had the best matches against each other. Brendan and I always had that starting since day one. All of us, you know, we'd kill it with Tyson as our mentor. And Tyson's like, the great thing about the four pillars in All Japan is, whether it was singles or in a tag or you know, whatever, these guys just, you knew it was a main event match. It wasn't an export coming in. It wasn't their matches with others. These guys were the pillars of the company. They held it down in the ring together. And I kind of saw that as kind of a fresh take on a stable. It's not a bunch of guys who are friends that don't fight each other. It's like, we're in a stable because we fought each other, because even within the stable, we compete against each other to bring out the best in each other. So as the pillars, we let that organically sit when Tyson cut a promo about putting over all the names that's come through the house. But at the end of the day, it's the pillars that have been holding it down. And just the first two promos just had subtle tosses of the pillars and naming us, and, you know, nothing more, no angles, no one standing together, and, you know, a few fans talking about it, and then you slowly start seeing it built. And at that time, Tarek and I had a feud, and the whole idea was I wouldn't stand tall with them, and, you know, played the jealousy card there. And by the time, it was honestly about 10 months since we started dropping those Easter eggs and starting to compete against each other as the pillars, that it took 10 months before we stood unified in the Smash Wrestling ring. And it was the night that Tarek became the Smash Wrestling champion. And the show opened up with me and Tarek in a 20-plus minute last man standing match, which as a booker is probably the most asinine and dumb decision ever. But I guess there's an exception for every rule. And I remember, like, Tyson was pushing for it to open, and because we knew the whole goal from like a year and a half ago was that Tyson's long title reign was going to be stolen away from a heel stable. And when he makes full circles and wins our version of, you know, the Royal Rumble tournament to get a title shot at the big show, he'd be injured and he'd announce Tarek as his replacement. So we knew for a long time this was Tarek's crowning moment. So what was advertised was our blow off, and Tyson's like, open the show, like, this is our big show, you need to set the tone. And for both of us, it was probably one of our best matches of all time, and it, you know, really embodied what the pillars were about. And by the end of the night, he became Smash Wrestling champion. So yeah, this has kind of been our story to kind of play off the four pillars of heaven in All Japan, you know, Kawada, Kobashi, Misawa, and Tao. So it's kind of, and not necessarily all of us kind of embody or pattern ourselves after those guys, but Tyson took the basic premise of four guys who were really the foundations of the company and really waved that flag with pride. And we've kind of made it into our own. And it's kind of cool that it's just not four guys that were put together. It's four guys who are genuinely like best of friends, right? And it's kind of been cool because we didn't mind taking it out of Smash and we weren't aggressive in getting it out of Smash. But once we started working and standing in a Smash ring as a group of four, there's been a good 6-7 promotions by now that has used us as the pillars. And we've been fortunate that it was off to a hot start and we ended up holding titles and a lot of promotions. And, it was kind of cool to see that a lot of people saw something in us and put some good faith in us. And what's beautiful about that is selfishly speaking for myself, it's really made wrestling a happy place for me because unlike the other three guys, I'm a promoter and I know the trade-off of being a promoter or booker in wrestling. Sometimes you don't get booked places because you're not using certain guys or your competition or whatever the behind the scenes reasons are, right? And I've also made my peace that sometimes there are months where I have to be responsible and put more time and effort into the brand than into the wrestler. And it's not because I don't love being a wrestler anymore. It's that the promotion is the bread and butter of me, you know, putting a roof over my family. And it's going to elevate just not myself as a wrestler. It's going to elevate the pillars. It's going to elevate the rest of the roster. Like I'd like to believe it did for guys like Tarek and Kevin Bennett and Rosemary and others, you know, they all deserve the credit first and foremost. They made themselves and we provided the platform and they had to run with the ball. But at the end of the day, you know, I've kind of sometimes had to make my peace that some months wouldn't always be that gravy outside of Smash. And fortunately, it has been, and the pillars are a big part of that. So I don't just go wrestle wherever someone offers me a booking. I can say no. I can. I have enough of a schedule between Smash and where I am with the pillars and places that I have good relationships with that I'm busy and I'm happy. And it's kind of, I think... it's coincided quite well with the pillars. I think I looked at that project as finding a way to be happy and motivated with wrestling. And I think as easy and obvious as that sounds in and out of wrestling, sometimes I think we all get lost in the shuffle of trying to get somewhere we think we're supposed to be that we forget to just be happy, right?
Yeah, you get there and then you realize you're not happy at all. And you're like, oh, why did I even bother? So I get that. Yeah. It's funny. 2 years ago, one of the main guys we talked about was Tyson Dukes. And 2 years later, we're still talking about him. I feel like, and maybe it's the border, maybe it's, I don't know what it is. I don't feel like he gets, I don't know if it's the credit he deserves or the exposure he deserves. Like, A, am I right in that? And B, if so, why?
I think answering that question, well, I'll answer the question, but I think all those hypotheticals, two guys I look at are guys like Tyson Dukes and Mike Rollins. Psycho Mike Rollins is another guy here who deserves to be everywhere to be signed. And both can be proven as well-rounded, as marketable, as draw. And to be blunt, they've both been looked at by every big company or been given some kind of serious look. And I don't mind saying it. People that matter in all those companies have said to these guys, you should be here. Or people have looked at those guys in, you know, I'm not going to say the company's name, but really respected top tier companies and say, why are you even here? You should be with those guys. Like, that's how crazy it is. They're not even signing and say, you should be in even the bigger leagues. And part of it is I know from plenty of companies there is more of a reservation in giving a Canadian talent visa unless they'll do it. But you don't see crazy amounts of Canadians in Ring of Honor, Impact, and, you know, I don't know, New Japan's paperwork, but, like, all these big companies, it's a little, you know, again, I said the heart and soul of pro wrestling, whether people like it or not right now, will always be the American market. And I know Japan and the UK are booming, and I'm not taking away from anything, but part of their boom was that they got recognized in the American market. So a Canadian promotion like Smash can draw 2,000 every show, and that means we're having a boom, and that means Canadian wrestling fans are great. But the point where it will take off is when the American fans start noticing that there is this company with 2,000 fans. And whether people like it or not, that's kind of a reality. And again, in sports and entertainment beyond wrestling, that's kind of the case. It's part of that ladder. And for these guys, it's the reality is, I think once they can cross that border and they can, you know, kill it as they are killing it on our platforms in Canada and beyond Canada, once they can do it on American promotions on a more regular basis, I think someone will eventually sign them because there's less of a hassle in getting them a contract or getting them a visa if it's already in the works. And right now, and at the same time, when you are able to do that, that means there are more people competing for you. And especially in the climate over the last 2 years, I'm not diminishing anyone who's got signed, but without a doubt, there is so many guys getting signed for the fact that if a company doesn't pick them up, someone else will.
Right.
And maybe it's the big guys making sure the little guys don't, you know, build a roster and they're even pillaging the second tier of signees, or maybe it's the smaller promotion saying if we don't sign guys like this, the big guys will sign them. Ever since the Performance Center came up, and Performance Center is a great thing, but again, there was a massive ripple effect since that thing became a beast, and Ring of Honor won exclusive contracts, Impact won exclusive contracts, you know, MLW has contracts, Lucha Underground had contracts, New Japan started doing more aggressive contracts, especially with foreigners. Even the companies that don't have contracts were being more aggressive in giving their guys a reason to either stay on the indies or have them as a exception clause. The guys were signing with Ring of Honor but saying, but I can still do PWG, or I can still, you know, do company A and B as my home promotion. And there was such leverage and all this ripple effect from, you know, my presumption was always, and maybe I even said it 2 years ago, was always that for NXT, it always and WWE Performance Center, it made sense that if we sign 50 guys and one or two of them is the next CM Punk or Daniel Bryan, it's worth the investment. It doesn't mean the other 48 aren't good. They can be your Cesaros and your Kevin Owens and all these guys, and you know, you are benefiting from, and they even have more platforms right now. So it's crazy, and I think that's the thing for guys like Tyson and Rollins and all these. You hear about even other talented guys in Canada that are like, why aren't they signed? It's they couldn't cross the border, right? And once that's possible, or the exception is once a company decides, like Impacted with Rosemary, or AEW did with the Smash Brothers, that you know what, the visa is going to be a long process and it's going to be a headache, but we're going to sign this person. And that's kind of got to be the case for guys like that. And I don't know, with Tyson, it is kind of frustrating because it's crazy. He gets better with age. The reality is he's not that old, but you know, being 40, he still looks in better shape than guys who are 25, 30. He's wrestling better than those guys. He's healthier than those guys. And you know, I said this 5 years ago, and I'm saying it now. I can't even comprehend in the next 5 to 10 years him looking old, him wrestling old. Like, the guy conditions himself and treats himself like a machine, and is the embodiment of understanding what a pro wrestler is to be at your best on every level, and that includes even his professionalism. And again, he studies tapes from All Japan and World of Sport, and he's a freaking trainer who's producing a ton of talented kids at his wrestling school. And you know, here's a trainer who's a student. It's crazy. But yeah. I think as the guys like that, I think they eventually make their peace not to let it eat themselves up. There could be eventually an opportunity, and you're starting to see a lot of guys get in his shoes, at least on the American soil, get an opportunity, and they get, you know, their 5, 10 plus years, who knows what it ends up being. And some of them end up being trainers or head coaches at some of these big companies or producers. And whatever journey it is for him, hopefully we can be a bit of that, you know, success story. And if not, he's definitely left his mark in more than a few places across his career.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope for sure. You brought up Mike Rollins, and that's one of the things that I wanted to bring up, too, because Mike Rollins is... I discovered his character through Smash, and maybe this is not him in general, but because we've actually interviewed him years ago, even before we last interviewed you. Basically, where did Mike Rollins' conscience come from as a character? Because that is hilarious.
Honestly, Mike Rollins has been on fire for over 3 years of Smash, and he was already held in high regards by me as a promoter, a booker, a peer, a friend, but the fast track of his growth these past 3 years and why he's one of our top guys and organically a top babyface is we started with him in Pepper Parks, known as Braxton Sutter from Impact as the well-oiled machines. We just wanted two really good workers and good human beings on our roster that we just didn't want them to blend in as guys you can see on any other card. We're like, what makes them special here? And we put them in a tag team, and they're your typical two gym guys, you know, and their promos are always great because, you know, they're functioning as well on the machine, but Mike's always a psychotic one, just throwing in, you know, the wrench in their promos and all that. And they'd come out and people would chant oil up, and they'd rub each other with oil bottles, you know, just fun stuff. And they'd do these crazy montages. And Mike has always been Mike is actually intelligent, and it's not just the creatively and comedic intelligence. Mike is comedic and has comedic intelligence. He has street smart intelligence. He book smart. He's a very smart dude, and he's smart enough that he studies science and fitness and nutrition to a T, and he can put nutritionists to shame. That's why he's in great shape at the gym. He's in great shape from his dieting. He's smart with his wrestling psychology. He was a wrestler who graduated from wrestling school and still decided to go back to another school because it was an opportunity to train with a respectable trainer. He's done all the camps with Harley Race and Ring of Honor and all them. Like, you know, he's not above that. And here he is with us, and knowing who he is, and we kind of started getting him involved in the creative process of his character. So he came up with a lot of the great ideas for the well machines, and we'd pitch him an idea and he'd make it better. He'd envision an idea and we'd take the production front of it, and we'd you know, put together his vision. And for myself as the promoter booker, and for our guys who were doing the video editing and the production front, and for Mike, all of us working together on Mike's ideas were always a pleasure. And where we eventually evolved from that was when him and his tag partner, the first time they split, I just wanted to kind of, they were our top baby faces, they're a top tag team. We're like, we got to freshen it up, or else they're just becoming these top baby faces and doing these montages for 2 years. It's going to get redundant. And we had a tease of them breaking up, and Mike was always trying to win Pepper's favors back with like a box and a gift, and Mike would always smash it away. And so by the time they had their big match at our big show, it was a what's in the box match. And there's all these boxes, like boxes that you can fit a fridge in, small boxes. And the creativity of it was unreal. And by the next year, and, you know, at the end of the match, they made up. There was a box, and they were singing a Bonnie Tyler song. The whole crowd started singing. It was just unreal. Like, you know, and this is high-risk stuff. You know, it could fall flat with the crowd, but Mike got himself so over, and the layout of these storylines were done so well with us. And a year later, when, you know, they went into the next big show as the first ever tag team champions, they're facing the Super Smash Brothers, and they were challenging him in a tables, ladders, and chairs match. The concept of that is Pepper's like, you know, in Smash Wrestling, the tag teams always settle the score in a tables match. And we won these tag titles in a ladder match, so we're going to have ourselves a tables, ladders, and Mike grabs the mic and says, boxes, tables, ladders, and boxes match. And during that match, which won match of the year, because Mike's matches are always brilliant, just one thing that I'll just never forget, little things he'd do, it's like the Smash Brothers would smash the box over his head, and they started a super kick party over it. And Mike no-sells it and stands up like a zombie, and when he pulls off the box, he had a bicycle helmet in there. And then he starts doing bicycle kicks after that. You know, just like the little things, you know. So anyways, I'm telling you all this just to give you a grasp of the idea of like Mike's character and how over it's been with the crowd. And I think he's just another thing that really makes him, he's very good at ad lib with the audience in any kind of match, comedy or serious. Anyways, but when Pepper officially turned on him and they finally went their separate ways, Mike started developing a conscience that talked to him over the speakers before the breakup. And it was teased that his conscience telling him to turn on Pepper, you know, he'd have a chair. He's like, you know, now's the time to hit him. And then, like, instead, Mike would open the chair, put him on the chair, and massage his back. And, like, eventually it was Pepper that turned on him. And the conscience was brilliant. I'd say only one time it didn't work out. And it's such a high-risk effort. But it requires timing and creative stuff. But, you know, some of it was comedy. Some of it was dark. But it actually played into the match. Like, the first time he did the conscience was in a match against myself. And Mike really wanted to build a story, and I just came out of that match of Tarek. I told you about the last man standing match where I was bleeding all over the place. So Mike was just, we decided to do a video promo backstage of him watching the match with his friend, with some students or other wrestlers trying to prep for his match with me. He's like, oh God, he bled so much. He's like, oh, he's like, I'm squeamish. I can't punch him. He's going to bleed all over the place. He's like, I don't do well with blood. So everyone's like, Mike, you don't have to, you know, punch him. You can work the arm. You can work the leg. And he got so excited. So he'd come out there and he'd just beat me up. And every time he went for a punch, he'd hesitate and work body parts. And by the time he went for the 10 punch, you'd hear, Mike, this is your conscience speaking. He's like, beat him to a pulp, bash him. And he gave me, like, instead of a 10 punch, he's giving me like a 50 punch and just crying as he's punching. He's crying as he's punching me, right? And so, like, everyone's eating up the conscience. And then it's like, Mike, this is your conscience speaking. You left the stove on. So now, like, he's trying to go home. And the stage at this venue is pretty big and quite far from the ring. He's still up there at 8.5. I'm like, he's not going to make it. And he slid back in at 9.9. And, you know, then I'm beating him down. And he's had so much fun with the conscience. You know, like, my manager would be behind him. He's like, Psycho Mike, this is your conscience speaking. Be careful. Kingdom James is behind you, right? Stuff like that. But it's brilliant because, like, you don't want to get typecasted as a comedy guy or a character guy, but Mike is in shape. He's very technical. He's a great striker, and he's clearly had storylines with us as singles and a tag wrestler. And in his matches, he still reinforces that. So he's not just dependent on being this. By the way, this is not a shot at anyone. I'm just typecasting that he's not an out of shape, one-dimensional guy who's just overkilling a spot or, you know, the same concept of comedy. Like, there's always purpose. It's easy. He could have done the conscious thing and just overdid it the first time. But he's like, no, like, you just came out of a match where, you know, you were bleeding. So let's work in that I'm afraid to punch you in the face till my conscience tells me. He finds a purpose to kind of give narrative. And the beautiful thing about that, in my opinion, is there's a bit of a Hogan effect to that, in the sense that, you know, no disrespect, but Hulk Hogan didn't have a special body slam. But when Hulk Hogan hit a body slam, everyone cheered for it because it was Hulk fucking Hogan.
Yeah.
So Smash Wrestling, Mike can do a body slam or a clothesline just like me, but they're going to pop for him because it's Mike freaking Rollins doing the body slam, because he's built himself to be this character that's lovable by the fans. He's credible as a wrestler, and, you know, hitting jackpot with an angle or a gimmick is great, but there's always a danger of stagnation. And Mike has continuously, at least in our brand, and keep in mind, we don't run in just one town, we run a lot of towns. He's kept himself fresh and involved himself over the course of 3 years, specifically with these, you know, these gimmicks. And he's had his moments of being worried if he's over killing something. And to his credit, like, I tell him, I don't think he can do wrong. Not that he's just not doing wrong, but I feel like he's so over with the fans that he's got mulligans, you know, like, if one day something does fall flat, he's just been that great. But yeah, it's just, it's been, it totally reassesses your idea of what wrestling is. Like, I think we're all, as professional wrestlers, we're flawed because we're artists. It's like a musician who listens to a song that's number one on the charts for 5 weeks and says, that's not music, I'm a better musician. It's like, that's just a catchy hook. Well, yeah, isn't that music? People, like, some of the greatest songs of our times are songs where it's easy to remember the hook and it's catchy, and you just have a large crowd of people of different age and gender and color and nationality who all know the song. A whole baseball stadium is singing a song because everyone just knows it. It's catchy. It's iconic, right? And music and wrestling doesn't just have to be a million verses or a million moves just for the sake of it. It's impressive, but there's different definitions of what impressive is in art. Art is so subjective. So while someone may enjoy more of these example in wrestling, a John Cena versus a top indie guy, both are correct in their version of what's impressive and what's enjoyable to them. But at the end of the day, if we're looking at it from a business standpoint, and I sometimes hate to say it, but it's like, what's the bigger draw? And with Smash Wrestling, again, we are a niche, but and all indies to a certain degree is a niche, but in our audience, regardless of size, what has constantly been a big appeal? What is the crowd not just making noise for moves, or like, what are they smiling about? What's like memorable to them? And it's fun sometimes when I get feedback from people who come to the show who are friends or from out of town, or from they're diehard fans, but they're traveling from 4 or 5 hours away, and I'm like, thanks for making it, dude. It's like, usually people say, they'll mention the name or a crazy gimmick match and Mike Rollins. It's always and Mike Rollins.
And Mike Rollins.
Because, you know, because the character and the stuff he does is memorable. Like, there's a reason why he keeps winning match of the year, because it's just not that they're gimmick matches, it's that they're so creative and fresh, and they're very ballsy, to be blunt. And I remember when the first What's in the Box match I was telling you about, I was standing there with Jimmy Corderas, and like, he looks at me and goes, this is professional wrestling. And I knew exactly what he meant. And, you know, not for him to sound like an old timer, and I always believed since day one I was more of an older spirit in wrestling, but you know, I'm an artist and I'm flawed. I'm trying to go out there and give match of the night by, you know, going the extra mile with some crazy moves. And I'm like, this guy told a fucking story. He came up with something that was unique. He dared to be different and take a chance. And no one till this day who was at that event can tell you what move was hit in that match. But they can tell you what was in some of those boxes. They can tell you that the whole crowd was standing and swinging their hands and singing to Bonnie Tyler, you know, turn around, and like people holding up lighters. And I, you know, seeing some of the wrestlers, seeing the balcony with all the wrestlers just smiling like children. I'm like, this is wrestling. We're smiling like kids. You're creating moments, right? Like, and the greatest example that wrestlers like to use, and it's always true, is Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels. It's the I love you super kick, right? Mm-hmm. And the kiss on the forehead after. I don't know what arm drags or back suplexes they did early in the match. And I'm not diminishing that. You still need the meat and the potatoes, right, of your story. But to be Mike Rollins, who I truly admire, it's like you need to create moments. And to create moments, I think you need to build towards moments. You can't just show up at a show and create a moment. You can create a ha-ha or a holy shit. But all of Mike Rollins' major moments with us, much like all these memories, like the I Love You kiss and all the big WrestleMania moments that we grew up on and we still idolize, they came with a build. You got to create a moment, and you got to get to that moment before you can create it, right?
Yeah. If someone can't say why this is happening, then it's not worth it, and it's not going to accomplish what you want it to accomplish. So that's amazing, and just to hear about that. You talked earlier about social media and, of course, how important it is and the use of it. Right now, it's kind of crazy, and being in the business that I'm in with the website and all that and monitoring social media so closely, like, it almost seems counterproductive in a way. And when you see social media, the way the fans treat the product, maybe it's more the mainstream product, the WWE product, what do you look at it, the way fans react to the product today, where it's almost always bad, or it's kind of a preconceived negative?
I know everyone has their different opinions, but you just quoted me, which, again, this is going to sound terrible to say, but I hate being a liar, but I hate social media and, like, for the negativity. And I've already in the past year or two, like, just reduced my consumption of social media. And over the last 2 months, it's near non-existent. Like,
right.
I used to not do Twitter because I found it to be way more negative than Facebook, because people can hide behind, you know, not using their real names or real photos. But now I almost do Twitter every day, but it's not before. I'd scroll my feeds, and the feeds and the comments were, and you know, strangers commenting at you were negative. Now I don't really check my notifications. I never used to use a search bar for trends, and I love sports, and I, right. you know, or and now, like, I just go and check trends and sports. I'm like, I see, hey, what's the updates on the Raptors? I'm like, oh, cool. Like, hey, you know, this athlete's doing this thing. Like, you know, I don't really scroll down feeds as much anymore. And it sounds terrible to say, because I used to preach that you have to stay updated with your industry, which is true. Like, I was big on scrolling across Reddit and Twitter, and specifically following the top 15 indie companies in North America, in my opinion, and seeing what makes them different, you know. But the danger is, there's one thing between keeping an eye on that stuff and consuming it too much.
Yeah.
And consuming everyone's opinion. Like, the reality is, again, I told you, there's the regular fans, and they'll see a post about us bringing in, let's say, Jordan Grace, and they're like, take my money. They put the meme down. You're already coming. I know you're coming. So, but then, you know, we take that and we put way too much stock into that. Mm-hmm. And that's not the new fans. And the reality is, the people you're targeting are not going to be responding to that post. You're right?
Right.
You want to use Facebook and Instagram ads, and you want to see them see the. What got us a lot of fanfare at one point was the Young Bucks came here and called us the PWG North of Canada. And that is not something that's not a match graphic you post where someone says, take your money. That's fans going, hold on, I got to follow this company from Canada online. Or hold on, I'm within 4 hours of Toronto. Maybe I should start making trips there. Hold on, I live in Toronto. I'm silly not to go where the Bucks are calling a legitimate platform. It's stuff like that that helps you evolve. So I think we have to take a lot of stuff on social media with a grain of salt. Not be blind to it, but take it with a grain of salt. And the challenge for me is, I just don't have the stomach for negativity. I don't shoot back. Like, if anyone follows, I don't mind name dropping Jimmy Cortez, because he's very open about it. He chirps back at fans who make asinine comments on his Twitter. And he can do. I cannot do that. Like, just because I don't have the patience for people like that. It turns my stomach when there's such a negative, you know, I don't want to call it confrontation, but just the vibe. It's not I'm afraid of these people. It's not that, like, I'm offended or sensitive. It's just, I'm like, I see that shit. Someone says something to me, I'm not going to cry, but I'm like, fuck this noise. Yeah. I'm going to go spend time with my kids. I'm going to go shoot some basketballs. I'm going to work on Smash. Like, I'd rather focus on growing my company than engaging in this war of someone's asinine comment, right? And like I said, like, you have all these comments that could be positive, but you have to take them with a grain of salt. And then, unfortunately, just one person makes a dumbass comment about your appearance or your company or your friends or politics, and we're human, and that one comment can ruin your day, you know? I'm pretty good at moving on quite quickly. You know, something may bother me, I'm like, all right, in 1 hour, you're not going to give a shit. But the reality is, that one comment can just be really shitty, and 100 good comments, you got to be careful not to assume that, you know, all is well, because the people you treat well and the people that, you know, have treated you well in return are continuing to put out good vibes out there. And you need those good vibes, and you need to appreciate those people. But again, that's my issue with social media, is the good you have to take with a grain of salt, and the bad, they're fucking nightmare to deal with. And I just, you know, it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
And it's like I said, not to be redundant, but it's technically terrible to say, because I always preach, you know, be aware of your industry, stay updated. So to some degree, I think I do, because I am now of the mindset that if there is truly something big in your industry or something that's picking up steam, it's hard to avoid it. And a good example is, I started hearing about Game Changer Wrestling maybe 2 years ago from another promoter in the area, and then because he mentioned it twice, I saw a bit of legs, and then you see Janela Spring Break eventually. It's like, you won't have things that are worth your time and interest, even in their early startup phases. You can't avoid it. So all the other things, all these small fractional things, this drama, you know, other promoters or whatnot, it's like, I just turn a blind eye to it. I mean, I've conditioned myself for a while now not to need to react. Someone can go out there and say something negative about me or my brand, and in all honesty, I can look and say, that's bullshit. I can give a very mature response and say, that's wrong. But I know what path that leads down. There's never a time where you or myself, Greg, we respond maturely to someone, and they'll say, you know what, that was a very civil response, Greg Sebastian. I do not see eye to eye, but, you know, my apologies for stepping. No, it's like, fuck you, cat block. Then your friends step up for you. Their friends step up for them. You know, a stranger comes, steps up for you. And then eventually there's always someone who comes in and says, hey, why don't you both keep this private? This is very embarrassing for the indies, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then now it's a whole shit show all over the board, and people are probably going to talk for it for 4 or 5 days now. So for me, it's, you know, I don't even look at it, or I just roll my eyes, and then I'm like, ah, it's wrong, it's bullshit, but in 2-3 days' time, hopefully no one's going to give a shit. And right. I'd like to believe if you and your team and your roster, for the most part, carry yourselves professionally, do your best to put your best foot forward, you gain a good reputation, you know, you run your business ethically, for the most part, most people will respect you, and for the most part, you should have a good reputation. And while it's ideal for guys like you and myself to be loved by everyone and every promoter and every wrestler, that's never going to happen. So you got to kind of make your peace when... I do think if people don't want to like you, they don't want to like you.
Yeah. You know? That's exact truth. I mean, sometimes...
Such is life outside of wrestling, too, right?
Yeah, if some people don't like you, they don't like you. And it's one of the things I like the most about myself is that I hit a point a few years ago where I got to that point where I was like, I really don't care what anyone else thinks about me. Like, outside of a select few group, my family and really my closest friends, it's like, if someone doesn't like me, I put that on them, and I'm good. Yeah. And now if someone really close to me, you know, in that select few, then it's like, okay, what do I got to do? But outside of that select few, that's on you in a lot of ways for me.
I just wish, like, you know, from the outside looking in, I would really love for people to be able to engage even in disagreement. Like, you know, it's one thing with my brand, but like to just, you know, people, when people are talking about Raw or PWG or wrestling climate, kind of like, you can disagree, but kind of try to be civil about it. But, you know, I don't want to just narrow it down to wrestling fans, but it just seems the wrestling community gets too much in the cat block, F you know, you're wrong, you're an idiot, let's shame this person. Like, to be honest, that's another thing that drives me nuts. It's like, sometimes people make a comment, like, you know, they say this wrestler sucks, and, you know, yeah, it's kind of a rude thing to say, but then the people who are trying to be more ethical are ganging on the person. Let's shame this moron. You know, it's like, now you're no better than them. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's social media for me. It's like, again, I wish I was like Jimmy. Jimmy's the best man. Like, he's not afraid to voice his opinion. And like, I can see him look at his phone and I can tell he's probably reading something offensive. Just calmly responds to the person, goes on, and we continue our conversation sipping our coffee, you know, like, oh my god. But yeah, he's been in this industry from the top, you know, with the WWE and down, right. Like, I, you know, he's seen shit, he's been in the public eye. I think he can handle that. It just, you know, everyone's built differently. Like, social media is not for me, and it's shitty because as a wrestler and as a promotion, like, you gotta use social media as a platform, and mm-hmm. You know, same goes for you. It's whether we like, you know, it's a platform, and you gotta change with the times. And you know, it's like, if you were, imagine being in a wrestling company 8 years ago or 15 years ago, whenever Twitter started picking up, and you're like, no, I don't care what Twitter is. No, I'm never gonna use it. Until today, you're still not touching Twitter. Well, you're gonna become extinct if you're not moving with the times. Luckily for me, being so busy with Smash Wrestling, you kind of, I'm good at not micromanaging, and so we have a fantastic team, and there are guys who handle the social media front, and obviously, right, they don't need to deal with that kind of drama stuff, as, you know, they're promoting the stuff, they're engaging the fans who respond positively, and or if there's, honestly, if someone gives us a negative criticism, they'll engage them too, as long as they're mature, you know, and I think anyone's foolish to pretend to say they're perfect, but as a brand, you know, sometimes we haven't been perfect, and if someone complains, hey, you know, my seat blah 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 wasn't available, or one staff member maybe had to move me here, we're like, hey man, you're absolutely right, well, let's make it up to you, and I'd like to meet you in person at the next show. Like, I think luckily my team handles social media pretty well, so I it's not that we ignore social media, we have people who handle it, so
you can ignore it. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. So you know, social media.
That's better, because it allows me to focus on the other stuff that, you know, other people can't. At the end of the day, if the finances are with me, there's a lot of things I have to touch. And
right.
It's not so much that no one else can't. It's like, it's my ass on the line, so I'm going to put that best foot forward. And there are some areas that I have more experience with, right? So
that's the truth.
It works out. But yeah, I'll be really from the get-go, it's just me being honest. It's not my cup of tea to engage on social media.
Yeah.
I like to see sports stats and sports highlight reels and stuff like that.
But on that note, you can go follow Suave Wrestling on Twitter and follow Sebastian for
now. You're going to get so many Toronto Raptors retweets and video clips.
And I made fun of my co-host, who's not here, Patrick. He just retweets the Funko Pop tweets all the time because he wants to get a free one. And so I made a deal with him. Like, I sent him one, but in exchange, he couldn't retweet that for like a month. Yeah. So unfortunately, that month has expired. But
My previous tag team partner and I, we used to just plug Somersby, which is like a cider beer, so much that we inadvertently got like a giant like gym bag and t-shirts and merch, and they sent us a bunch of free stuff. So I see where your friend's coming from.
Yeah,
we weren't aiming for it. We're just, you know, putting over something like a gimmick, or like, you know, how some people just plug their energy drinks or their coffees, and it's like, hey, these guys were like, hey, thank you. Here's some free stuff.
Exactly. That's, hey, it's what you got to do sometimes. That's what we're going to do. We decided off air after last week's show that we're going to, in the coming weeks, we're going to pick an XFL team, and we're going all in on that XFL team. We're going to buy shirts. We're going to do everything. We may not even ever be near them, but we're going to go all we can for that. So, excellent. Well, do me a favor. Let everybody know what is coming up for Smash Wrestling, where they can find it, where they can subscribe to it. Let's get it, you know, promote it. Let's get it out there just in case people don't know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the best thing people can do right now is just either follow us on our social media platforms or YouTube. On Twitter and Instagram, we're at Smash Wrestling, or just Smash Wrestling on Facebook to go to our fan page. Like I said earlier in our chat, we just had a heavy schedule with SummerSlam weekend, working with Progress and WXW and OWE and Shimmer and Femme Fatale and Rise, and we had a big loop. We hit a couple markets for anyone who's in or near the Ontario market. We're in Toronto, London, Kitchener prominently. There's a couple other markets we're semi-regularly in. So right now, with the crazy summer, specifically August, we kept ourselves quiet in September, but we do have a couple events coming up in September and October in the London and nearby regions. So London's halfway between Toronto and Detroit, essentially. We have shows in St. Thomas, Tilsonburg, Fanshawe College in London. So people keep an eye on our social media and be a little patient. We're trying to grow the company and do some fresh new things. So we should have new dates coming up sooner or later for Toronto and all that. But we put our heart and soul into the summer. So for the first time in a long, long time, we have a bit of a quiet schedule, which is crazy. It's like, it's almost uncomfortable because I'm used to having like 5-6 shows a month and stressing. But just follow us on social media and on our YouTube page, and we have a lot of great content. So I think if those that know about us, once you see new dates, smash-wrestling.com, you'll definitely see it on our social media or website. And We, like I said, we keep busy months. We run heavy schedules. So September is going to be quiet, but right around the corner, I'm hoping that in late 2019 or 2020, people will see some great things with us.
Yeah, and I'm excited about that. I know you teased it a little bit, and I can't wait to see what that is if it comes to pass, and hopefully it will.
And with that, I'd like to also add that I have just Googled XFL teams, and it looks like I'm all in on the Las Vegas Outlaws.
All right, there you go. So, so in terms of me on social media, at ChairShotGreg, at TheChairShot.com, and of course go to TheChairShot.com, where we encourage you, whether you're on social media or anywhere else, to always use your head. Sebastian, thank you for joining us for this show. I know people are going to enjoy it. A ton of good insight and just, you know, continued success on everything. And of course, you know, you taking the time out to do this and how busy you are, and just hope that Smash just keeps getting bigger and better.
Oh, thank you. I had a lot of fun, as always. Honestly, I just recalled our conversation from 2 years ago being a lot of fun. And, you know, I think it's – I always enjoy when you can speak with someone inside the business, because it's cliche, but it's really shop talking, right? Yeah. You just talk about promoting or the climate of the business, and, you know, what used to work, what is working, comparables, just, you know, and talk about things that usually – I find that I just love talking with people about stuff that typically isn't talked about, you know, talking about the ripple effect of, let's say, the Performance Center, like, over the last 5 years. That, to me, it's crazy. I don't think, like, that should be covered everywhere, but, like, it's literally changed the industry. If you just think about it, it's affecting how things are going in different countries across the globe, you know, and it's fun conversations to have, because it's the reality of our business, and a lot of them are for the better and some are for the worse, or some of them, you know, perspective, right? All these guys getting signed is great for the wrestlers and it's great for the fans and it's creating so many options, but for the independent wrestling promoters that used to capitalize off these guys, it's creating a challenge, right? So these are fun discussions to have, and hopefully it's fresh insight for the listeners.
It's funny you talk about, you know, with the Performance Center and everything else, and just, you know, AEW, when they came about, whether people like AEW, don't like them, whatever, their slogan early on was change the world, and I think inside the business you realize, you know, with now how contracts are, and now you've got NXT going to television, like, they really have changed the world just by being there. And so it's you know, changed so much for so many people. And, yeah, 2019 is, you know, we said it at the end of 2018. We joked on my show. It was going to be a year that we talk about, like 1997. And we're going to be talking about it for ages. And it's delivered in a lot of ways already. 2019
crazy
has.
It's not even done, right? It's like we're, what, 8 months in? We got another 4 months to.
And you know, and that's the thing, the company that's changed so much hasn't even hit TV yet. So, yeah, it's going to be nuts. So, good stuff, man. Well, I appreciate it, and hopefully everybody listening appreciates it too. Patrick and Miranda are back next week, and we will hopefully entertain you again on the Greg DeMarco Show.